Hi guys, it's Tom from the Tottenham Way here, and this season, as you know, we are sponsored by Harry's, and Harry's are the US shaving company coming over to the UK and hoping to make a big impact. And if you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, you will get your trial set, and your trial set is for £2.95. It would usually cost you £11.95, and in that trial set, you will get some shaving foam, you'll get a blade, a travel cover, and a handy little box that it all comes in. We love it, don't we, Dan?
We do.
We've signed up and everything. It's really good stuff. We both enjoy it. Harrys.com/Tottenham. That's the promotional code. You go there. It will cost you £2.95 to get the trial set. It will usually cost you £11.95. It's a really good way of supporting not just Harry's, but supporting the Tottenham Way and helping to keep the content free. We're not charging for it yet, and we don't plan on doing that anytime soon. So again, Harrys.com/Tottenham. Get your trial set. Cheers. Well, we're back, Dan, after 3 weeks, I think. We usually have a break around the international break anyway. No one can have any beef with that, I don't think. But we did miss 1 week, didn't we?
We did. With good cause, though, mate. You were very ill, and I did England.
You did do England. How was that? Have you done it before?
I haven't done it before. It was a really good experience, but I can totally see why a lot of the more senior journalists who do it every international break get quite jaded and demoralised with it.
Is it harder to build a story?
Kind of. It was a really good experience for me. Like, I went to St George's Park, which is in the middle of fucking nowhere, like genuinely in the Derbyshire countryside. Like, I thought Hotspur Way was difficult to get to, but it's like a hour and 45 minute train, then a 20 minute taxi just to get to St George's Park. And got there, went with Miguel Delaney from The Independent, and we were cutting it a bit fine. And we got there and kind of walked into this big gymnasium in the hotel at St George's Park, and literally every senior football writer, or chief football writer in the country was sitting on this sofa. And Miguel kind of goes over and they're like, "Oh, hi, mate." And everyone was just like, "Who the fuck is that?" And I just kind of sat down on the end, and then we'd had 20 minutes with Rashford and 20 minutes with Joe Hart. And
do the Spurs boys recognise you?
The guys who do Spurs? Yeah.
The Spurs players, sorry. Because there's a big contingent.
Yeah, I think they would. Not all of them, but I mean, I think Lloris and Vertonghen and Kane and a few of the ones who more regularly stop in the mix zone would. But it was a great experience. The only problem with it was like a sit-down interview and a 20-minute interview, but there were so many, there were like probably 15 or 16 of us, that it ends up being quite bitty, and everyone's got a different thing they want to talk about, understandably, and then it's quite hard to follow a thread and get a clear theme, especially when Marcus Rashford was made it quite clear that he didn't want to be there. And was a bit kind of surly, short answers. Joe Hart was a bit better. But
it always seems more interesting to do club football, mainly because international football is such a drag now. As a fan, I mean, I don't know what it's like on the inside and stuff, but I'm not interested. I can't care less. And it's a shame because there is a strong Spurs contingency in England now. You think when Rose is back, and you've got Rose, Dyer, Winks, I suppose, now as well, Ali and Kane. And it's only really Kane that seems to be doing anything for him at the moment. I mean, they're becoming the Harry Kane team.
Yeah, and it's a massive shame. And I think during the international break, a lot of people were confusing the questions of, does international football matter with why don't I like England? Basically, no one
really
cared.
It was a really good week of football, actually. All the crap that went on.
It was a great week of football.
America and South America and stuff. It was good. It was quite enjoyable.
It was really good. It was one of the best kind of playoff nights for a long time. And actually, I went to Little Portugal in Stockwell, just down the road, with my Portuguese mate and watched Portugal-Switzerland, which is a totally crap game. But Portugal won 2-0 to top the group and guarantee qualification, and everyone in this little bar, which was one of about six Portuguese bars in a row on the street, was going mental. Everyone in all the other bars was going mad. few kind of people got in their cars and honked the horn and drove off, and you could tell they really cared about getting to the World Cup. And then on the pitch they were singing the national anthem, they were getting, all the players were like throwing their shirts into the crowd. It was like England, literally Wembley was empty before the players had a chance to go out. So there is quite a serious disconnect between fans and the national team.
Yeah.
Something's got to change, and I don't have the answers, but it's a bit of a worry.
We're not expecting you to, Dan.
Yeah, okay.
The future of English football does not rest on you. It might rest on Pochettino at this rate, but so we're back.
Literally, that's been one of the themes of the week as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's not it doesn't literally feel that far off.
Is his doing.
Yeah, and it's been referred to quite heavily in Guillaume Balay's serialisation. No, the book, isn't it? He's written a book and it's been serialised in the mail this week.
Yeah.
Have I said his name right? Guillaume Balague?
Guillaume Balague, I think.
Not trying that.
Okay.
Guillaume. Yeah, but it seems to be bits and bobs are coming out, and it seems genuinely interesting, considering on the face of it, it is a guy that's done a really, obviously, an incredible job, but, and this isn't a criticism, I'm just saying, he hasn't won anything. He's not gone and, you know, done a, for lack of better alternative comparisons, a Wenger. Wenger walks into Arsenal and won a league in a year, and everything changed. And that's really kind of the narrative behind Pochettino, but we haven't won anything. So what do you reckon about this book? I'm really looking forward to it.
I can't wait for it. Yeah. I wish it was my book, but nonetheless, I can't wait for it.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's been, stuff from Levy specifically, on Kane specifically, I'm thinking like big chunks, like the stadium.
Yeah, so they serialised a bit from Levy in the mail at the same time, and he said he wants Pochettino to be Spurs Ferguson, which Pochettino has said himself before, but it does mean more coming from Levy. He said he wants him to stay for 10 or 15 years. I think in the last couple of hours, Pochettino in Madrid has responded to that and said, yeah, well, give me a contract. So it's all like really nice at the moment, and I think it shows just what an intriguing figure Pochettino is, that he's worthy of a book without him won something, I think.
That's true.
The work he's done has caught so many people's attentions and imaginations, and he hasn't even won a trophy yet.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point, actually. We were talking earlier this week about, so Pochettino reacted to that Harry Kane team comment of Pep's, which I don't think we need to talk too much about, really, but you thought that his reaction suggested that it did actually get to him, got under his skin a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it was Friday's press conference, and from what I understand, Pochettino kind of wanted to talk about it, so it was the kind of, I don't know this for sure, but I think it possibly might have been a question that was a plant, so Poch went into the presser wanting to address that issue, and yeah, he really just went off on one, and it's, as a journalist, it makes your job really easy. So, okay, I don't have to worry about what the story from this press conference is, because he literally spent 7 minutes banging on about how it was disrespectful and sad.
Was it
and
as explosive as some journalists have suggested?
I mean, the way he delivered it was quite measured and very calm, and I think he made a lot of fairly reasonable points about kind of breaking the managerial code. He kind of suggested that, you know, that's just not what you do. But, I mean, the content itself, you know, was pretty strong, I thought. I mean, what I said on Twitter, which I think you're referring to, is that, you know, it did show that Guardiola had got under his skin a little bit. But then I don't think that's necessarily a negative. I think in the past, Pochettino has tended to be maybe a bit too nice. And I think back to the Leicester season, when the Leicester players were coming out and saying, oh, we want Chelsea to win the title before they played Chelsea. The other way around. The Chelsea players were coming out and saying they wanted Leicester to win the title before they'd played. And Pochettino was very adamant that this was all fine, and, you know, he understood it. Whereas, and I've said this before, you know, if he'd have come out and said, well, but, you know, we're not that happy about that, it'll be interesting to see how hard Chelsea try and this kind of thing, it just adds a bit of pressure.
Yeah.
And I think it quite possibly was a way to try and unsettle Guardiola a bit and disrupt him, because City are absolutely flying.
Yeah.
Pochettino might well have thought, we're going to be playing catch-up for another season unless we can, you know, stop them somehow.
Put her down an early,
you know, roadblock. Get in their heads a little bit. Yeah. And I think it probably was a calculated attempt to do that.
There's no real rivalries now in with managers. When you think in the past of Wenger and Ferguson, and then Mourinho and Wenger, Ferguson, Benitez and Mourinho. There's common themes, obviously. But, like, Conte's quite a respectful guy off the pitch. Well, it seems as it. And then Klopp doesn't really seem to have a lot of beef with anyone, and nobody really kind of gives that much of a crap.
Well, he's fired shots at Mourinho this week.
Yeah, I guess. But Mourinho seems to be the common one, but it's like, he's a bit old news now. I don't really care anymore, but I quite like the idea of there being a rival.
I think Wenger Mourinho is the biggest managerial beef in the Premier League, and that's kind of lost its edge, and everyone's a bit bored of it.
And it's a bit pathetic.
And then they started being nice to each other again, and I think there's nothing wrong with it, with a good old-fashioned managerial rivalry. And if you look back kind of historically at what Pochettino said about Guardiola through the years, it's always got a little bit of an edge to it. He's previously said, I think, I did it the hard way, you know, kind of suggesting that Guardiola had walked into all these top clubs.
Fair point as well.
Yeah, he also said... before the first game against Guardiola City, the Spurs won 2-0 without Kane, by the way. He also said that although Guardiola was kind of the face of modern football management, there were lots of other coaches who deserved that title as well. So he's very keen to not put Guardiola on a pedestal and make it clear that, you know, there are other people doing similar stuff.
So maybe it was an innocuous comment, but maybe that's all it takes for him to be like, no, I'm not having this.
Yeah,
if it was someone else, you'd think he probably would have let it slide. But maybe if he's got sort of a bit of a thing about Pep, and maybe thinks he is a bit patronising and stuff, maybe it's just like, that was it. That was
I think it was because it was Pep. I don't think he'd have done that to Mourinho. But then I also think it's a good opportunity for him to... curry a bit more favour with the squad as well. Because you can well imagine Pochettino, you know, behind the scenes saying to Ericsson or Ali, look, I know you're just as important as Kane. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to say it on Friday, and I'm going to make it clear that it's not just about him, it's about all of you guys. And if I was Ericsson or Ali and I saw him then do that, I'd be like, oh, cheers, Gaffer. That's really going to...
Do you know what I'd do? If I was Pochettino, when we go to the Etihad, I would just send out Kane for the warm up and just for like the team photo and stuff, and then just let the others charge out. Not sure if you're allowed. Anyway, we proved we're not a one man team at Wembley on Saturday. Ericsson getting the winner, obviously. You mentioned him now. I think he's as important as Kane is at the moment. The form that Ericsson is on this season in particular, but I think we've mentioned before about this calendar year, he's been kind of unstoppable and having the same sort of season as De Bruyne's having as well, but De Bruyne's getting a lot more, seems to be
De
getting
Bruyne
a lot more
against
attention. He was insane.
Stoke was just ridiculous.
But Eriksen has had very similar levels of performance, I think. Fourth time of asking to get a league win at Wembley, I don't think it mattered how it happened in the end, did it? It just needed to happen. It wasn't a great performance. We probably gave them more than we usually would give a team in terms of chances and letting them back in. I think they had a couple of decent moments, let's say. But we just needed to win, didn't we? We couldn't let it go to the fifth game at Liverpool.
We did just need to win. But I think before the match, everyone thought, oh, this would be the one, because Bournemouth aren't the kind of small team to put 11 men behind the ball. They'll come and play their way and they'll try and get at Tottenham, and that'll suit Spurs, and Spurs will just pick them off like they did against Dortmund. But obviously Eddie Howe isn't a total idiot, and he saw what Swansea did, he saw what Burnley did, and he saw the way to get at Spurs was to change things a little bit, and I think they did sit a lot deeper than Bournemouth usually do. They were a bit more counter-attacking than Bournemouth usually are, and I think, apart from quite a lucky ricochet from Ericsson at the beginning of the second half, then that could well have been a 0-0.
Yeah.
I mean, it really could, and that would have been worrying, because it was almost worse than the Burnley game, certainly. It wasn't at Swansea, so I don't know. But it was there was almost less of clear-cut chances, I thought.
Yeah.
At least until Eriksen scored.
Mm.
Afterwards, Kane had a couple saved by Begovic, and it opened up a little bit. But the first half, Bournemouth had the better chances, and then Lloris obviously made a cracking save, albeit from either Dier or Alderweireld, turning it into a goal.
I know that Wembley is a thing. It's naive to suggest otherwise, but when I think of the first, I think, four home games we had last season, which was like Palace at home, Liverpool at home, Sunderland at home as well. We scraped past in all of those games. We drew with Liverpool. We only beat Palace 1-0 with a late goal. We only beat Sunderland late with a Kane goal just before he got injured. We've talked about slow starts before, and even last season in a practically flawless season at White Hart Lane, we still started slowly, and we are just that team, aren't we? So now we've got this win under our belt, and we've got Liverpool on Sunday. You know, it's out the way before then. We'll come on to Liverpool, obviously, but is this the platform to build on to go and have a really good season, considering our way form as well?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I mean, definitely Spurs needed to just win. It is like it is a monkey off their backs, isn't it? And I think Eriksen literally said in the mix zone afterwards to journalists, you know, now you can stop writing about that. You've got to find something else to focus on. Mm. You know, the Wembley curse is lifted, and he was joking, but still, you know, in a sense, that is just done now. You know, no one can say Spurs haven't won at Wembley in the league, and that'll make a difference. And yeah, given we'll come on to Liverpool, but given the form against Liverpool over the last few years, and given Liverpool's form against the other top six, then it did really feel like it had to be Bournemouth. And to come back to Eriksen, yeah, I mean, it's not only that his level of performance is so consistently good, it's that he is making the difference in those games.
Yeah,
I think I remember last year there were three or four games, you know, in a month, I think, where he scored the first goal, and it was really important. I think at Fulham in the FA Cup, possibly.
Well,
Ghent in the Europa League. And he was scoring, but he was also scoring when it mattered.
I ran some tweets on the Tottenham Way Twitter when on international break. I was a bit bored, so I looked at all of his 33 goals, now 34. And it actually turned out that I think 10 of them were winners, or what would be classed as the winning goal. And that's obviously now one more as well. A third of his goals are of really vital importance. And I think there was a further percentage that were the opening goal. So our first goal that we scored.
Yeah.
So to either put us in the lead or get us in, you know, level terms. So his input is nothing like padding, is it? It's really important and vital. And when Kane perhaps is struggling at Wembley, he doesn't look particularly comfortable, or nowhere near as comfortable, I don't think. You need someone like Eriksen, in the same way as Ali did last season. You need someone like Eriksen to kind of step up, don't you? And he really has this season.
Yeah, you do. Although I wouldn't really agree that Kane's struggling at Wembley.
Do you not think?
No, I think it goes back to what I just said. I think Kane, like any striker, will thrive with a bit more space. And he's playing up front by himself, so when teams are putting lots of men behind the ball, as Bournemouth did, as literally every team who have come to Wembley, apart from Dortmund, did, then it's a lot harder for him. Whereas away from home, clubs feel a bit more pressure to go forward, to push men forward, and to entertain their fans and get results, and then the game opens up for him, and Kane's just ruthless when he's got a bit of space. And
Fair enough.
West Ham is the best example of that. If West Ham had been at Wembley, they'd have stuck 10 men behind the ball and tried to frustrate Spurs, tried to get it to 60, 70 minutes at 0-0, or nick an early goal, or whatever. Because they were at the London Stadium, they felt obliged to attack Spurs, entertain their fans, and for the first goal, Carroll lost the ball, and it was Kane, Ali and Eriksen in a load of space against two or three defenders.
Yeah.
Which they'd never have done at Wembley. And then the second goal was more or less the same.
Yeah, so I'm certainly not making any judgment on it. I'm just saying, if the August thing is a thing, if he doesn't score against Liverpool, that's five league games.
I'm sure people make it a thing, but I, and you're right. But I just think it's because of the way teams are playing. It's not, it's not because he's got a mental block at Wembley, because he showed that against Dortmund.
I suppose so. There's a potential for that to turn into something,
I'm sure,
to keep the old BDI on.
A couple of people, I didn't spot this myself, but a couple of people thought that Kane was a bit selfish against Bournemouth.
He is, though.
I suppose.
In general, I think he is. But, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, if you don't get 75 league goals in 3 or 2.5 seasons without being a bit selfish.
Oh, yeah, you're right. But I just want, you know, if it's almost impossible to criticise him, but I wonder if Pochettino is looking for, you know, ways to keep him on his toes. That might be one thing he says, like, you know, just remember that Dele Alli wants to score as well, and just remember that Son wants to score and Eriksen wants to score. And it just, you know, there's a case, I think. Again, I didn't spot this at the time, but I think there is a case that, you know, it's dangerous if it becomes, let's get Kane his goal.
Yeah.
And then,
which it seems to be against Burnley.
And then it's like, the rest of you can get one, you know. That's not how it should be working.
Yeah, I agree. Vertonghen, the shape was a bit strange. A lot of people were suggesting it might have been Son at left wing back, which has got its own, writes its own jokes now. But it was more Vertonghen, wasn't it? It was a sort of more of a flat back four.
And then at half time he changed to the wing back.
Certainly first half was definitely Vertonghen as a left back. But, you know, with Davis injured and Rose, was it last week, returning to training, it's a timely reminder about how vital the squad is. And it sounds really stupid to say it, but there is suggestion that, well, is Rose going to walk straight back in, or is he going to be...
Well, I think we're going to come on to this.
He's
going to be on the bench for Real, isn't he?
Yeah, but I mean, how much of that, if Davis was fit, would you see it? Do you know what I mean? I'm just thinking, like, Vertonghen hasn't played left-back for 3.5 years, and we're not going to do it very often. It's just the Rose situation is becoming a bit more desperate, in that we know that we need him. We can't afford to be like...
I see what you mean. Do you want to talk about Rose now, or wait?
I know he's going to be on the bench against Real Madrid.
Yeah.
We will come on to that. But do you think that he is likely to become, like, to play, let's say, 10 first-team games across all competitions before the turn of the year?
Rose?
Yeah.
It looks like it now, doesn't it? Literally about 3 or 4 hours ago, I would have said no, because on Friday, Pochettino said he was still a few weeks away from fitness. But in the last hour or something, Pochettino said, oh, he's probably going to be on the bench, we'll decide tomorrow, and he's in Madrid as we speak. He's travelled with the squad, and that's a massive surprise, because the club obviously made a bit of a song and dance about him coming back to training, I think Wednesday last week, with Lamella, after all this time out, and then Pochettino clarified that it wasn't full training, it was day by day. So they've, you know, either two things, it's one of two things, I think. You know, either they haven't been fully truthful about his return, and he was actually getting up to speed during the international break, and, you know, sprinting, etc. Yeah. Or the situation has become a bit desperate because of the sudden illness of Davis. But I think either way, the club isn't going to risk Danny Rose's health by taking him to Madrid if he's not ready, and playing on the bench if he's not ready to play in a match. So he's obviously not far off.
Yeah, look, I think my question is, I look at it in a very similar way to the Walker situation. And at the end of last season, when Trippier had overtaken him, in so many words, as the first choice right back, and then we had Sissoko playing right wing back against Leicester, didn't we?
Yeah.
And that's just the kind of thing I was asking of, like, Son and Vertonghen being seen as the guys that could kind of fill in, and Davis's first choice outright, but Rose could be sacked off because of his comments. In the same way.
Oh, no, yeah, I see what you mean. No, I don't. I think, yeah, even a few weeks ago, I wouldn't have been confident putting a large sum of money on Rose ever playing for Tottenham again, because it was still unclear how Pochettino had taken the comments, what was going on behind the scenes, and no one had heard kind of head nor tail from Rose or from Pochettino about Rose for weeks. But it's now seems pretty clear that that's water under the bridge, and he is going to be integrated back into the first team squad, and that means he'll have a fair shot at replacing Davis as the sort of de facto first choice in the biggest games. And one thing I'll say about Rose was Pochettino on Friday said something quite revealing at the very end of the press conference, which is obviously dominated by the Guardiola stuff. He did say, you know, when players are out injured for a long time, they're only human, and sometimes they can explode, I think was the term he used, and you know, sometimes they need to feel the love. And
well, if he's talking about Rose specifically as well, it does look like he's at risk of exploding in one way.
Yeah.
Have you been to training? I mean, I don't want to be mean. I'm not.
I'll just finish that point by saying that I do. Yeah, he might well have been referring to Rose, and I do wonder whether, you know, Pochettino has been a bit more lenient on the comments because he understood that it was, you know, a difficult time for Rose mentally, and he was under a lot of pressure. And I think it's really easy to forget that it is a horrible time for footballers being injured. And whenever there's an article about a footballer who says he's been struggling with depression or mental health, rightly, everyone's very sympathetic. And you remember the reaction the Spurs fans gave Aaron Lennon after that information came out. And if it's the case about Rose, then people, you know, that he was really struggling and he was having a bad time, and that contributed to the comments, and I think people will feel differently.
And I
just wonder whether Pochettino was alluding to that, and whether he's decided to give him a second chance because he realised that it was a lot more of a difficult situation than perhaps people understood.
Yeah, I totally agree. So he's got a very good chance of being on the bench against Real Madrid then.
Yeah.
So that's Tuesday night. So a lot of people listening to this may have already seen the game. It's exciting because this is what you should be in the Champions League for. And the thing that I keep thinking about is, do you remember a couple of years ago when Liverpool got back into the Champions League?
Yeah.
And they, I think it was under Rodgers, and they went to Bernabeu, and I think it was the third game as well, and they like totally ruined their first 11, but they really weakened the team, went out there. I think they lost 2-0 or 3-0 or something like that. Everyone was really down on them, and it was like, well, we couldn't qualify, or we didn't stand a very good chance of qualifying. Appreciate we're in a really good position in the group, but this is what you want to be in the Champions League for, isn't it? This is exactly why you're in the competition. This is for the sort of night that we want there. In
exactly
the same way as last time, this is the same, the equivalent of Inter Milan, champions of Europe, that we're going away and trying to show them what we're all about.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if Spurs win, or even if it's a draw, I feel like it could be quite a kind of seminal moment, and in the kind of evolution of Pochettino Spurs, like every team that comes from kind of, you know, relative mediocrity and refines success or finds success has a result that was really a turning point or a kind of coming of age moment. And you know, if Spurs can go to the Bernabeu and win, that will be it, because Real do seem like a class above not only everyone else in Spain at the moment, but everyone else. And I appreciate their form has been patchy, I know that, but I still think that they're come through the best team in Europe at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, three in a row now, isn't it? They've won the Champions League.
Two in a row.
And three out of the last four. I mean, they're it, aren't they? They are the pinnacle, and we're facing them. Well, I would say
they're ridiculously good. I mean, I think.
So where is a result going to come from us? Because again, to cast our mind back to 6 years ago or 7 years ago now, with the group stage in 2010, you know, Bale was the breakout. We knew that Modric was good and he was slowly getting up to that really sort of metronomic world-class player, but Bale exploded there and there was a lot of talk about it. Is that Kane? Is that
Spurs have quite a few players that wouldn't look out of place at Real Madrid, and that's what's so exciting about it. And that's kind of been not for me, but it has kind of been one of the themes of the build-up, hasn't it?
You know,
is Kane about to announce himself as at that level, and I think he probably already is. I think he could comfortably do what Benzema does, but he probably wouldn't want to, because I still think Benzema's job is to pass to Ronaldo a lot of the time. But Kane, Eriksen, you know, not yet, but nearly Ali, Alderweireld, Vertonghen, they're all players who you would think, and Danny Rose when he's at his best, they could play for that team.
Yeah.
So I think the result comes from Spurs playing, raising their level, those players raising their level and finding that level in the same way that Bale and Modric and Van der Vaart, when they were in that 2011 team, they knew they belonged at that level. Mm. You know, Van der Vaart had known it for years, but I think Modric and Bale were just finding it out.
Mm.
And it brought out the best in them.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm sure the same is true of Kane. We already saw it against Dortmund. And I'm sure when he gets in the Bernabeu, when Real Madrid come to Wembley, in one of those games, he will do something eye-catching or special, because that's where he belongs.
Dembele's also, he travelled, didn't he? His pictures of
I think Dembele and Rose were going to train tonight. That was the message from the club.
Right. Considering the next 8 games that we've got, which is, it's ridiculous. And I mean, I know I'm saying, you know, Real Madrid's what you're in the Champions League for and stuff, but the games outside of that as well, it's this could shape the whole season for the next month and a half.
Yeah, I almost feel like with Dembele, you can't.
No.
You can't, think in 8-game blocks anymore. No.
But then playing him against Barnsley and then him missing the next 4 games is just... It just seems we're using him very oddly this season.
I almost wonder if he's going to be a cup player this year.
Do you think?
I don't know. That would be very odd and not very Pochettino, but he's missed the last 4 league games. And
they've Weeks is
doing well. And they've obviously had him wraps and cotton wool for the last few days. He was training alone a few days ago. They're obviously being very careful not to let that foot get kicked by anyone in a bit of five-a-side. And I suspect they're going to wheel him out in the Bernabeu tomorrow night, and then who knows when he'll play again.
Yeah,
but
it
could be worth it. It could be worth it.
Yeah, that's what we did with Gazza in 91, wasn't it? He just dragged us to the FA Cup.
Yeah, I mean, it could be worth it. I mean, I think it's especially important given the Davis thing, because the big selection headache for Pochettino is where to play Vertonghen and Dier.
Mm.
I mean, obviously, they both start. Do you play Vertonghen at a left wing back and then move Dier into the back three and then play Winks and Dembele in midfield? Mm. Or is it Dier and Dembele in midfield, Vertonghen?
And how much will it matter as well? Like, that's the thing, they're so good that you just wonder, don't you? You just think, oh, fuck it, go on, go put Son and Sissoko on the wings and just get. I think this is the perfect game for Sissoko. I think this is him all over. No, I do, and I genuinely mean that. I just think he's turning into one of those players that you stick him up against Burnley or something.
A big game player, isn't he?
He is, and he absolutely is, and that's. It's not really a compliment, but it's not also not a criticism necessarily. It's just how he seems to. You see him in the I know they lost, but the Euro 2016 Cup final against Portugal, and he was unplayable from sort of centre mid right wing. I don't know. I just think bullets to stick him in there and see what happens against Real Madrid.
I mean, if Spurs aren't going to have the majority of possession. I'm afraid not. So counter-attacking, as it did against Dortmund, could be the key.
Yeah.
And Sissoko is good for that. I mean, he was good for that against Bournemouth. He deserves a mention against Bournemouth.
Yeah, he was good.
Although he really fucked up GK's moment. The moment for GK was just past it, a few yards in front of him, not 7 yards in front of him, and getting clattered. But I think, what would you do? Would you play Vertonghen left wing back or have him in the back three?
I'd probably put him in the back three.
I'm assuming Poch is going to do a back three, because the back four did not work in the first half.
Sanchez was probably his first real dodgy game, I think.
Yeah, he was a bit shaky. Yeah.
And in a two, I don't think he was quite comfortable yet. And he might do in time, but I don't think he was quite comfortable yet. And Alderweireld was obviously on the left.
He looked like a 21-year-old centre back for the first time.
Yeah, and Alderweireld was on the left of him, and Vertonghen was even further over and stuff, and Trippier's in and out of the team. So it just wasn't comfortable, was it? I would go back three. I think I'm fine with Son as a left wing back because...
Oh, you'd go Son? I think it'd be Trippier, if anyone.
Do you... And Aurier, right.
Because Son's needed to replace Ali, isn't he?
Of course, yeah. Well, I guess, but then...
Unless Sissoko.
It wouldn't surprise me if Sissoko is used as quite an advanced player. It would surprise me if we try and hit him as early as possible and just tell him to do...
My only worry with that, I don't think Kane and Sissoko have very good chemistry.
No.
They don't seem to link up. Kane never passed to Sissoko.
Yeah.
Right or wrongly, but...
Yeah, I know what you mean. But it doesn't feel like chemistry is the sort of thing, the way to approach this. It's moments. You know, if Sissoko gets you 40 yards up the pitch, he doesn't need chemistry with Bale. He just needs to get his one pass to him per season, bang on, correct. And it could be 1-0, it could be Milan away. You don't know. But the likelihood is we will probably go there. We will probably lose, I think. We haven't got a fit enough squad for it. If we had a fully fit squad, I'd be more than happy to sit here and say, I reckon we've got a chance of snatching something here or playing really well and doing something. I just think we're far too lightweight at the moment.
I think there's a chance, but no Rose, Davis,
and you know, it just feels that we're, and no Ali as well. I mean, you're looking at four or five real first team players there. We could really struggle here.
Well, I wrote a piece today, a preview piece, and I referenced the Milan away game actually, the 4-3 in the San Siro, and I referenced Man U in the Super Cup in August when they lost 2-1. And in both cases, I said, actually the defeat turned into a bit of a positive. I mean, if you think back to Milan, because of the way Bale destroyed in the second half, Spurs came away from that with more confidence. They came away from that looking forward to the second leg more than Inter were. The second leg, the rematch at White Hart Lane, more than Inter were. And it turned into, it was a bit of a Pyrrhic victory for Inter because they were so terrified of Bale. It didn't do them any favours. And in the Super Cup, you know, Man U were completely outplayed and it really looked like it was the European champions against the sixth best team in England. They snatched a goal and I think afterwards Mourinho was kind of able to say, well, we deserved a draw. It should have been penalties when their goals was offside and stuff. And able to present it as a very respectable performance against a team who further along than United and use it as a platform for their season. And I think in the same way, as long as Spurs compete with Real, as long as they kind of worry Real, as long as they make it a contest, and even if it's they're completely outclassed but it's a tight scoreline, I still think any of those scenarios is almost a positive. And they can say, posthumously can say, well, it's Real Madrid, it's the Bernabeu, we're missing X, Y, and Z.
It's a free hit.
Yeah, it's a free hit.
As long as we don't get someone sent off in the first 15.
Yeah, that's the thing. The pressure's off, but having said all that, another 4-0 there would actually be quite damaging because I think then the players like Kane and Eriksen who have said, this is showing how far we've come, you know, so we're going to use this as a yardstick for progress, then they look a bit silly and have to admit, well, we haven't made that much progress. So I think it is a free hit as long as Spurs are relatively competitive, which I suspect they will be because if you think about it, they've only been humiliated once under Pochettino at Newcastle. And I still think that was an anomaly of a game. They just don't tend to get humiliated. They tend to stay in games even if they're the second best.
Yeah,
you know, even Liverpool last year, which I think is the most outplayed Spurs have been for a long time. It's still only 2-0 in the end.
And in City, you could argue as well, we got back to 2-2 like that, sort of being in terms of being outplayed. It's 6.5 years since we were in the Bernabeu last. 4-0, I seem to remember Gomez throwing a couple in his own net.
It was Crouch, wasn't it?
Crouch was sent off, but I remember them playing about 20 yards further up the pitch than anyone else had played against us in Europe yet because they knew that the long ball to Crouch is a knockdown to Van der Vaart. If Van der Vaart's on the halfway line, what are you going to do? So it was that's one of my overriding
Van der Vaart did an interview with Tom Ornett, the press association, who's come to the pod before today, which was quite good.
Yeah.
But he's kind of said that Harry Redknapp's team talk was just... they're a good team, we're a good team, go out and play.
Oh, gosh, yeah. That was quite chastening, wasn't it, that whole night? I mean, it was a bit of a free hit, but I certainly think there's a bit more riding on it this time round.
I mean, I remember genuinely thinking Spurs could do it after the AC Milan game. Because that was actually, in fairness to Redknapp, I've just taken the piss, basically.
Yeah.
But in fairness to Redknapp, that was a, you know, as close as he ever got to a tactical masterclass.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I remember thinking, well, if they
could do that to Milan. I remember still thinking that we had a chance after the first leg in Madrid. Like, you think, well, we're here, because Bale dived in the, he went over in the box over Xabi Alonso in the second leg. He went over him within like 3 minutes, blatantly with the idea of get that early goal and let's see what happens. And it was the biggest dive I've ever seen. He's not going to be playing, is he?
But, no, he's not.
Well, we've had a question from Greg King, Greggy L. King. Combined squad for 2011 and this year. Now, I thought this was a pretty easy question to answer. I just thought Bale and Modric, bang, that's it, really. But he
says squad, not 11, yeah, which I quite like.
Yeah, and I think if you look at our bench, or what it could be, even with a fully fit squad, it's quite lightweight, really, isn't it? What do you reckon? I mean, we've got it in front of us here.
I mean, in terms
no one in the back six is getting in apart from Ledley King.
Yeah, in terms of squad, you'd have King sweeping up. You'd have King in the 11 sweeping up instead of Sanchez, wouldn't you?
Yeah, in the 11.
So
yeah.
King, Alvaro and Vertonghen in the back three.
Yeah, ridiculous. But you'd probably have Aurier, you'd probably have Rose or Davis over Acosta.
I don't know about that.
Really? What, over Acosta? I mean,
I know he's not a liked character for what he said, but
I don't think he was ever.
I think
really
he's not far off Ben Davis level, or Ben Davis isn't far off his level. I don't think there's much between them. Acosta was a really technical footballer.
You got two left backs in the squad. Yeah, right? Davis.
Okay, we're talking combined squads. It's not who would you add from 2011 to the current squad.
No, that's what I mean. I don't think he wouldn't replace Rose.
Okay,
Davis.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'd have a bit of Vedran.
I'm going to stick with Jensen Ben, because I think he's probably a nicer bloke than Acosta. And there's not much between. And he's done well.
Get well soon, Ben. Van der Vaart.
Yeah, Van der Vaart.
Bale, obviously.
Modric, obviously. Crouch over Llorente?
I'd have probably Pav over Llorente as well at the moment.
Pav over Llorente.
Mate, Pav scored some goals. He was one of our top scorers in the Champions League. Yeah, his second touch was a tackle, but yeah,
I'd add Crouch and Defoe to the squad for Llorente and Nkudu, but I'd probably leave Pav alone.
Yeah, Bale in instead of Sissoko, probably. There's not really anyone else that we could.
Nkudu,
I suppose.
Well, I've binned him for Defoe.
Okay.
But yeah, Crouch for Sissoko, fine. Yeah. Aaron Lennon?
Yeah, probably.
I know Poch binned him, but.
Yeah, but vintage Aaron Lennon.
Yeah, San Siro Aaron Lennon.
Yeah. They loved him as well out in Italy, apparently, during that Champions League campaign. They were big fans of him after the Inter Milan game. So I guess, actually, maybe there's a bit more crossover than I thought.
There's a bit more. I mean,
Billy Gallas in there as well over, who's our Foyth, I guess, Foyth. Which is a bit harsh, but it's still.
I mean, you might have him for, you'd have him for a year as a Foyth, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Not permanently.
Cabal was all right. This is what I mean, we've got a really good first
11. And Sandro.
And Sandro, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm not his greatest fan, but I like Sandro.
Not later Sandro, not Sandro knowing what we know, but San Siro Sandro.
Yeah, maybe
a monster.
Our first 11 is Poch, but maybe our squad and bench should have been fleshed out with a bit of Redknapp.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, there you go, that's that question answered. Do you think, just to finish off on Real Madrid, Ronaldo's already got 4 Champions League goals. They've not been very good at home this season. They've only won 2 of their last 5. But I think they're 2-2 in the Champions League so far. They beat Dortmund away as well. I mean, they're still pretty handy, aren't they? And it's going to be pretty ridiculous to watch us play against them if they're at their best. But it's just exciting, isn't it? It's quality.
Yeah, it is amazing. I think I'm gutted not to be there. I got bumped, sadly, but I kind of understand why I got bumped, because it's a massive game. It's a huge game, and yeah, it's
arguably
it hasn't really kind of sunk in yet, but it is the reason you want to get back in the Champions League. And I do think last year, I remember when the group was drawn, it looked very winnable at the time, before we really knew how good Monaco were. But there was never that glamour tie in there.
Yeah.
And I think you'd take that, even if it makes it a lot harder to qualify, because tomorrow night when the music comes on, you see the Spurs guys standing there at the Bernabeu with Ronaldo and Modric and...
Look, we go out first.
Casemiro, Cruz, all those guys, and it really will, you know, it sounds like a very kind of player quote thing to say, but it really will, I think, give us a good idea of how good Spurs are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, they've proven it in the Premier League over the last couple of years, albeit without winning something. And if Dier and Dembele go there and make life difficult for Casemiro and Cruz and Modric, then that's a massive thing. It's a really massive thing, because those three are phenomenal. And if Sanchez helps to keep Ronaldo quiet, then it's a massive thing.
Yeah, it's a
And if Kane scores and makes life difficult, it is a massive thing. So, yeah, it's going to be great.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. What might not be as awesome is Liverpool. I mean, it's just horrible, isn't it? We've not won in 10 league games against them. The last time we won was when Bale and Lennon scored in under AVB, and then Bale scored an own goal by booting it into his own face. Remember that?
I do now, yeah.
Yeah, that's the last time we beat them, and it just feels like... And we've done this pod for 2 years now, so we've had four Liverpool fixtures, and every time we're always saying, oh, we've not won in 8 games, and then it was 9, and it was 10. And it's just... It feels like they're in our heads a little bit, aren't they, Liverpool and Klopp? Because we played... His first ever game in the league was against us, and he just ground out a 0-0, because we were kind of flying by that point. And then he just sort of turned up, set about not losing that game. And then later on in the season, we drew 1-1, I think, didn't we? And we were still in the title race, and they just kept us again at arm's length. They've not been brilliant. They've been really good for about 2 years at that five-year period that we've not beaten them. But what is really frustrating is, even at their shittest, we haven't managed to beat them. And it is very frustrating, but...
If there's one manager in the league that seems to have the edge over Pochettino, it is Klopp, really annoyingly. I think particularly last year at Anfield, Poch got it wrong, and Klopp, I don't think he really did anything differently, but I didn't know enough about Liverpool to say for sure, but he just put Mane up against Davis, who wasn't really up to speed then, and wasn't playing with much confidence, and Spurs' high line was ruthlessly exposed, and it was quite unpleasant actually watching that.
It was lucky to be only two, really.
Yeah, as I said before, it was, you know, that was the one game that actually could have been another quite big humiliation, you know, a 4-0, but Spurs kind of, Liverpool, I think, were just happy at 2-0, weren't they? And they calmed down a bit, and Spurs came back into it. He does seem to have the measure of Pochettino, but it's a really interesting game, because I think, as I said before, I don't think Liverpool will put men behind the ball. You know, they will try and press and they will try and counter, because that's what they do, but there should be a bit more space at Wembley than there has been in the last few games anyway. Liverpool's record against the top six is so good. Yeah, they do tend to just raise their game.
But their record is with Mane. A lot of that record is with Mane, who is obviously out of this game. So, still got Salah, still got Coutinho, still got Firmino, you know, real good footballers. But their problem seems to be, somebody mentioned on, I think it was the Totally Football Show, said that they're a team of midfielders. That all of their centre-backs can play in centre-mid, and all of their strikers can play centre-mid, but they've got no striker. They're rubbish in both boxes. I mean, I know I'm setting us up for a 3-0 home loss here, but but it is true, you know, and there is stuff to exploit there with Liverpool, isn't there? Their centre-backs are all at sea at the moment.
They're massively exploitable. I mean, if there's one team that Kane could literally run through the middle of, is Liverpool.
And Eriksen to find that ball. I think that's the key. It's the bit before the...
The last few times I've seen them, I haven't seen them that much, but the last few times I've seen them, the kind of space between the centre-halves, between, what is it, normally Lovren and
or no, Matip.
Matip. Has been alarming from Klopp's perspective. And I do wonder whether he got it wrong in the summer by not signing defenders.
Yeah,
really.
Or just putting all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah, so but then Liverpool can definitely be got at. But I wonder if it'll be a game that comes down to tactics and psychology more than kind of individuals. And a lot of it might hinge. It's very hard to talk about it now because we don't know what kind of result Spurs have had the burn about.
If it is a win
or a draw tomorrow night, then the confidence kind of flooding through the team.
I was going to say, this is probably the first time.
Making a difference.
First time we've played Klopp's Liverpool with them on the and a bit of a rut. Yeah. A little bit. I mean, I know they've got a Champions League game this week as well. They need to win that, I think, after their early results. So they win that and we lose, you know, 3-0 to Real Madrid or something like that. And obviously it all looks very, very different. And people listening to this might already know that. But it does feel like this is the first time they've been under pressure. He cracked a little bit today, didn't he? There was a question to him. Yeah, there was a question to him that said something like, are you worried about, you're a nice guy but you've not won much? Or are you worried about being a manager that's likeable but not won anything? And he said something about, is it okay to be a clown? Or is it funny? Is it good to be funny but not successful or something like that? I was like, you're not funny, so it's totally different, mate.
Klopp's really fucking arsey.
Yeah,
the amount of times he gets arsey with journalists is definitely more than Mourinho. It feels like that way, but he still seems to get like quite an easy ride because he's a bit of a wag. He's a bit wacky.
Yeah.
But the amount of times he's just arsey and just like, well, why am I talking about?
Yeah, he does have a pop.
Seems to be more than any other manager.
Yeah, I'm not. I used to like Klopp, but it's like anyone that goes to Liverpool, they instantly... I probably hate Liverpool. They're next after Chelsea and Arsenal, definitely. I really can't stand them. Just don't... Because they're kind of us in a different cycle, in a different stage of their cycle. Do you know what I mean? Or just, you know, even at their worst, they were still winning stuff, and even at our best, we're not. And it just pisses me off, because we are better than them, and it just annoys me. Yeah, I mean, I think we could be okay. I think I would stick with a three up front. I'd put Ali back into the team. But I would be looking at Eriksen all day long, just trying to find those runs, just keep him on the back foot. I mean, we still don't look hugely convincing at Wembley, but since Chelsea was our first home game, wasn't it? But this is kind of a high stakes, should be a good atmosphere. It's 4 o'clock on Sunday, isn't it? Late kickoff.
I believe so, yeah.
So, I mean, it's starting to get... I like that when it starts getting dark early and stuff. It feels like you're properly into the season and stuff. So it could feel like quite a different atmosphere at Wembley, I think. More like a night game and a bit like the Champions League game against Dortmund. So, good opportunity for us to perhaps have a bit of a coming-of-age performance in the league.
At Wembley?
Yes. I mean, it's this time in the last two seasons that we beat City at home, 4-1 and 2-0. Roughly this sort of time, sort of late September, early October, and they were springboards for us. They were, that's what helped us to go on big, good runs for the.
Well, I'll kind of disagree with that because after the City game, do you remember?
That was the
run of one win in 10. But I know what you're saying, and I think that makes it all the more relevant. I think Spurs came out the international break this year with the exact same record as last year from 10 games. Not necessarily the same amount of wins in the Cups and Champions League and League, but it was 7 wins, 2 draws and a loss from 10 games. That's what we had last year.
Oh, right, okay.
Going into the international break in October. And then they obviously won 1 in the next 10 games. That kind of last gasp win against West Ham. So this year, it was quite important to beat Bournemouth, I think, for that reason as well, because that was such a bad period, and it's one that Pochettino has said publicly cost Spurs the title because they just fell too far behind Liverpool.
Yeah.
Because after the City win, it was City who were top, and Spurs were right on their tail.
Yeah, we drew with like West Brom and Leicester.
Bournemouth, Leicester and Arsenal, lost to Chelsea. lost to Monaco, drew Leverkusen, lost to Leverkusen. Yeah. So it was all, and lost to Liverpool, in fact, in the League Cup. So it was a really, really bad run. And this year, it's been another kind of okay start.
Mm.
But it does just feel like Spurs are kicking into gear a little bit. And I think this year, it's really important to build on that. And Pochettino's teams have shown that they can learn from bad spells. Obviously, they finished last year really strongly, having collapsed the year before. So I think he'll be looking at a really strong spell over October and November, even though the fixtures are so difficult, to kind of prove that last year was something they've learned from.
Is it? So our next date is, we've got Madrid twice, Liverpool,
Man U, and Arsenal in the league,
United,
and Palace in the league.
That's right, yeah.
And West Ham in the League Cup, yeah.
And Dortmund, I presume.
Dortmund after the next international break, yeah.
In December, early December, something like that.
Still late November, Dortmund, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, this is going to be it, isn't it? We're talking about Real Madrid being a test of it, but these next eight is, if you want to win the league, if you want to go through to the next round of the Champions League, and you want to win a cup, any cup, then we have to win, like, what, seven out of our next eight, probably?
I think
pick up points in seven of them, but win five?
It's very difficult to say anything's make or break in October and November, because arguably Spurs proved that wasn't the case last year. You could have said, oh, that run's broken their title push, but then they won something ridiculous in the league, like 14 in the last 15, and went close to the title, albeit it wasn't enough. But I do think the next run of league games certainly could break the title hopes.
Do you think that?
Well, it's Liverpool, Man U, and Arsenal, and Palace at home. And Palace are a team who, as we've been talking about, will come to Wembley and put a lot of men behind the ball and try and counter attack. And if Spurs still aren't good at coping with that, then that's no guarantee of a win, especially after they got their first points.
Let's finish with another question then, because you, at the start of the season, you said that you thought we were title challengers. You saw no real reason why we shouldn't be. Has that changed? We've now had nearly 10 league games, we've had a couple of Champions League games, first win at Wembley and stuff. Would you still think we're weird title challengers, or would you consider maybe top three, top four?
I still think Spurs are title challengers. Yeah. If I had to make a prediction now, it would be that Spurs end up doing to City what they've done to Leicester and Chelsea in the last 2 years, which is to chase them down.
Yeah.
Because it does look like City are flying and they're a class above everyone else. No, I do think they are at the moment, but I think a lot, so much depends on the Wembley form. I mean, Liverpool and Palace are kind of the perfect next two games. So the team that are literally bottom of the Premier League and have really, really struggled, and you have to be beating at home if you want to win the title, basically. And the team that have been the bogey team for the last few years. So that will give us a good idea. And then obviously the away games are at Old Trafford and the Emirates. And last year, and the year before, I think everyone was in agreement that the problem was going to the other top six and getting points. There was no problem at home. Spurs beat them all, apart from Liverpool, at White Hart Lane last year, so it wasn't really a big problem. The problem was getting points on the road against direct rivals. So we will get a very good idea, I think, before the end of November, Christmas, about whether the top four is the aim or the title's the aim.
I think we just need to get through this unscathed. Getting to the new stadium with Champions League football, for me, is...
Yeah, but you are a known grumpy man and pessimist.
It's not that grumpy. I'm pretty happy-go-lucky. Yeah, I don't know where that came from. No, I think...
It was a scowl on your face.
Yeah. I'm not sure about pessimistic. I want to be on the right side of history, let's say.
You don't want to put your neck on the line.
No, and I don't think that's necessarily anything negative as such. I think it's a tough old league anyway, and we've done remarkably well the last two seasons, but a lot of that has been down to beating certain teams at home and having such good home form. And it's just very, very difficult. It's difficult to replicate that. I would be more than happy to get fourth at the end of this season, going to the new stadium with Champions League again. makes a world of difference. Okay, let's end it there. Nice to be back, Dan.
Yeah, good to be back.
Good chat. We'll be back on Monday, presumably.
We might try and do a post-Madrid one.
Of course.
We're going to the pub tomorrow and we'll take the mic.
Yeah.
And we will basically see how sober you are.
Yeah, we'll see if we do 45 minutes after the game in what could be a busy pub. It might be awful. Could be awful, yeah. Mate. But well, it could be great.
If we win,
I don't care. We'll just record one of us singing into the night tube. Anyway, see you next week. Bye.